I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. On today's show, I'll talk to writer John Kenneth Muir, author of The X-Files FAQ, All That's Left to Know About Global Conspiracy, Aliens, Lazarus Species, and Monsters of the Week. Is this book legit? Well, let's just say that the show's creator, Chris Carter, wrote the foreword. Stick around. Who's ready for a post-Californication dose of spooky Mulder? When my future wife and I started living together, the first appointment TV series in our lives was ABC's daytime soap, All My Children. It was her addiction, not mine, but it was kind of silly fun. Now, we always watched TV together after work, as we do even now, and the next series I remember us committing to in the 1990s was Fox's long-running bit of alien abduction weirdness, The X-Files. We watched every episode with bated breath, sometimes amused and awed, sometimes left scratching our heads in total confusion. But, and this is important, we were always eager for the next installment. We watched all 9 seasons together, worrying about Mulder's porn addiction, his sister Samantha's abduction, Scully's pregnancy, and Smoking Man's ever-impending doom. We even watched the spin-off series Millennium and the Lone Gunman, and the first feature film, Fight the Future. Honestly, we never did get around to the second, I want to believe. The first one didn't really knock us off our chairs. Oh, and we also followed Fox Mulder, actor David Duchovny, through his uncomfortably pornographic Showtime series, Californication, wondering when Dana Scully, actress Gillian Anderson, would star in the ultimate seductive story arc. Still waiting for that.
Yeah.
And now The X-Files is returning to the small screen for a 2016 limited series that creator Chris Carter promises will give fans everything we loved about the original and more. Now, who better to prepare us for the show's return than John Kenneth Muir, author of The X-Files FAQ, All That's Left to Know About Global Conspiracy, Aliens, Lazarus Species, and Monsters of the Week. John Kenneth Muir, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you, Bob, very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm just sorry that I didn't include in my subtitle N. Mulder's Porn Collection.
You know, it's not too late to go back and get it ready for the second edition because, you know, people who watch the show know how devoted he was to that.
Absolutely. We know how he's going to die from one episode, but autoerotic asphyxiation, right? That's ultimately his demise will arise from that.
That will probably be his demise in every series he's ever in. All right, so let's for people watching who are looking at the background, we'll get to that. Just trust me, we'll get to that. We started this interview 20 minutes late because I was so fascinated with all the great toys behind John. We'll get to that, I promise. So let's assume there are some people watching who never quite got the appeal of the original X-Files, but are actually giving consideration to watching its return in 2016. Can you kind of provide the Evelyn Wood version of what made the show compelling TV for so many years?
Well, there are actually a number of different fronts, I think, that made The X-Files so compelling. Firstly, you had these two characters who were so different, Mulder and Scully, and they each sort of represent a worldview, whether it's belief or skepticism. And that's really interesting to see these, you know, to have this it's sort of like glasses. You know, every week you put on these glasses and you see through the character's eyes and you think, am I a Mulder? Or am I a Scully? Or am I some combination thereof? And I think people love to look at the world that way. And, you know, every week they brought up these mysteries. There was one episode about the Loch Ness Monster, many episodes about UFOs. But they didn't even limit it just to what you'd say is like traditional paranormal things like near-death experiences or astral projection. I mean, they also talked about religion. They talked about faith. And, you know, just in general, what is belief? And I think that really connected with people. So I think it wasn't just intelligent writing, and the writing was extremely intelligent. It wasn't just the fact that horror movies in the 90s were unusually bad and The X-Files was unusually good. It was that we were being led in this journey, this very cinematic journey over several seasons, asking ourselves, do we believe this? Can we believe this? Should we believe this? You know, is this nonsense, or is this part of what it means to be human, to look through a different set of eyes and at the mysteries, you know, of the universe? So I think that's really what made the show so appealing.
I was going to ask you this later, but you brought it up. You talked about how good the series actually was. And I wanted to ask you, how does this show hold up by today's standards of The Wire or The Sopranos and Breaking Bad? Is it in that pantheon, considering, you know, there's almost a generation apart?
That is a great question. You know, I watched pretty much the whole series again when I was prepping this book, and I found that it really does hold up well. What may tend to take some people out of it is, you know, the model cars, maybe some of the haircuts, some of the fashions, you know, all the typical things of understanding that, you know, this was from 1993, so we're well past that in terms of our fashion taste, in terms of our technology, you know, their cell phones, things like that, no iPhones. So there are some things that make you stop and say, okay, we're looking at something from a while back here. But as far as how the show looks, Chris Carter and his directors did something amazing, which was that they shot every episode virtually as a mini movie. And so the series is really built visually on, you know, these strong tenets of filmmaking. You look at the shots they use, the compositions they use, and it's like watching, you know, a horror movie every week. And in that sense, in terms of the writing, in terms of the characters, but really in terms of the visualization, I mean, the show just holds up beautifully. You know, I think you could really say that The X-Files was a show that began that pantheon in a sense. You know, The X-Files is a little bit of a hybrid, as I think some reviewer pointed out, which is kind of funny since the show concerns, you know, human-alien hybrids. But it's a hybrid in the sense that you have the standalone episodes and then you have the myth arc episodes. And today, a show like Breaking Bad or The Wire or some such thing, they can pretty much dispense with the standalone shows and just go myth arc, go through the whole serialized, novelized approach to storytelling. The X-Files would give you more of a breath, so to speak. It's like, okay, so we've done, you know, 2 weeks of this myth arc, and now we're going to give you, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the standalone Monster of the Week stories, and then we'll go back to the myth arc. Now, today, that approach maybe is not so in vogue. I actually think it works rather nicely because, I mean, I love The Walking Dead and I love The Wire and Breaking Bad and all that, but there's something nice about The X-Files that occasionally you can take a breath. It's like, oh, I'm going to take a breath this week and just get a standalone story. It relaxes your mind a little bit, and you say, okay, and I'll be back, you know, in 2 weeks to pick up from where we left off. I think that The X-Files is really good at doing that, that, you know, this combination approach is really nice, because I do think some people have turned off the serialized approach a bit now. It's like, you know, originally TV was very standalone. You think about Lost in Space, Star Trek, things like that. You know, and then we moved into the era full on of 24, Breaking Bad, The Wire, stuff like that. And I know some people were getting really burned out on that. So the hybrid approach is kind of nice because you get a little bit of both. You know, as soon as you're tired of one, you're in the other. And then when you're finished with that, you go back to the other. You know, if you're binge watching The X-Files, it's great to, it's like, okay, you know, I only have an hour tonight, so let me just watch a standalone, you know, as opposed to having 3 hours of myth arc.
Well, and it's exactly what I wanted to ask you about next is you did, I'm assuming you rewatched every episode.
I did.
You have to, right?
So absolutely.
How long could you go continuously watching episodes? You know, what was the longest binge in preparation for writing the book?
Because of the sort of specifics of my life at this point, I'm married, I'm, you know, holding down a job, and I have a kid. I couldn't do as much binge watching as I want. So it's like I couldn't just do a run like I could have done in my 20s, where it'd be like, I'll do, you know, 20 hours at a clip, you know. But I think the longest I did was an 8-hour clip, eight episode clip, because of course, once you take commercials out, it's a little under an hour. And that was wonderful. I mean, I love getting immersed in Chris Carter's world. There's something about the way the dialogue functions. He's wonderful with voiceovers. I know some critics don't particularly like voiceovers. I love the voiceovers on The X-Files. I love when Mulder or Scully talk to us in their voice, telling us how they show the world, and I can just get lost in that voice. So I, even though I didn't have the opportunity to really go crazy, and I had to sort of say, okay, this is the time I'm setting aside to watch the X-Files, maybe two or three a night typically, it was still immersive enough. I couldn't wait to get to it. You know, it was so, you know, I'm getting to the Peacocks tonight, you know, to the crazy inbred folks, you know, right? That kind of stuff.
Now, there is a chapter of the book for every season, and you summarize all the episodes. Did you create your own summaries? Did you rely on the network summaries? How do you do that? Because, and you know, I'm thinking too, you only want to watch it once. It's with this many, and it was 9 seasons plus movies.
You know, for me though, the thing is this, and you know, I've always said my goal in life is to make a living watching TV. I've only been quasi-successful. I've made sort of a mild living watching TV. But I want to watch The X-Files or Millennium or Star Trek. I love to watch them over and over again because I feel like the more times you watch it, the more times you see something. I mean, the more new things you see. And I feel like, you know, I might miss something after only 3 viewings, and then I can make a connection on the 5th viewing, which sounds really crazy, and it drives my wife insane sometimes. But I feel like it's true. You know, when we typically watch a movie, I think the statistic is something like you only pick up 80% of it. You know, you only pick up 80% of what the creators are putting out to you. Now imagine, you know, a TV show and there's, you know, all these different episodes and they're interconnected. So, you know, you do have to watch them more than once. But to answer the question specifically is that I write all the summaries. I take extensive notes while I'm watching the shows, and I take notes sort of in categories, in a sense, like, okay, this episode is giving me a thread about Scully's faith or about Mulder's porn or something like that. And so then at some point, like when I'm writing up the chapters or trying to make connections on themes or things like that, I can say, okay, you know, we have this whole faith theme running through the series. And you know, then I can do a chapter on religion and how the X-Files looks at religion and things like that. So I take extensive notes. I have, you know, I'm sure someone would look at my chicken scratch and say, oh, you know, he's a serial killer or something. But I have these, you know, these notebooks filled with, you know, X-Files summaries and things like that, which I then go back to and refer. Now, if I were better organized, you know, I would have all the pages in order. I didn't always go strictly in order. Sometimes an episode, I'd say, okay, that's like setting up something, and before I lose that thread, let me leap over here and see if the punctuation of that thread, you know, if they tie that thread. But then I found out as I was writing that wasn't really I really probably should have just gone in order, right? You know, just stuck in, you know, traditional order, because then I'd always know exactly where my notes were for the particular episode, if that makes sense.
Well, when you do the Californication FAQ, go in order. That would be my advice.
I love Californication. I think it's a great show. I was so sad to see it go. You know, I absolutely adore the character of Mulder, obviously. I mean, he's fantastic. I never thought I would see David Duchovny, especially so soon after The X-Files, get immersed in a role that I loved just as much. I mean, Hank Moody, amazing. I mean, I think, wow. You know, I wonder if it's going to be one of those things like a little bit – I mean, I love William Shatner and Adam West, but it's like going to be one of those things where we're always going to say, I only see Mulder. You know, I only see Kirk. I only see Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that in Californication, it's like at some point you're like, no, I'm not seeing Mulder. I'm seeing Hank Moody.
Well, except – I mean, Mulder and Moody – both had a lot of similar issues.
They do. They
do. Know? And so for me, it was just like the Friends spinoff, Joey. I mean, it was just, you know, let me think about that again. It was the opposite of when Lou Grant left Mary Tyler Moore and did Lou Grant. He went from a comedy to a drama.
Right.
This is kind of the inverse of that, where Lou Grant would have gone from a drama to a comedy.
Right, the inverse,
yeah,
right.
The inverse. I mean, it's.
Yes, absolutely.
And I had, I can't think of the young lady's name. The actress from the first season who became the author of Punching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that one. I won't use the word because I think this show may draw in some younger audiences. But I had her on, and I mean, it was just that first episode where they have their encounter, and it sets the whole series in – I mean
yeah. –
It was insane. It was just totally insane.
It was. Oh, I remember God. I got a screener from that that first episode, and I put it in, I thought, wow. This was back in, I guess, 2006, something like that. I said to my wife, I said, you have to watch this with me. This is like, wow. They from the first scene, I mean, what the first scene was like this extremely sacrilegious scene in a church, like with a nun. And
right.
But it was hysterically funny.
That was great.
I loved it. I thought it was a great show.
It was another show that we watched it religiously. Around somewhere in the middle of it, we were starting to say, maybe we should let go of this one. It just doesn't, you know, there's no, it's not like we needed Hank we needed his redemption.
Right.
But it just kept going. It was a little too circular for a while. That's why I kept hoping that the series was going to end with Gillian Anderson being the final arc. I thought, oh, this would be so great. And then especially now in retrospect that he's following that with a return to the X-Files.
Right, right.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I got us off track here.
No, not at all, because I love Californication. And, you know, I guess it never got tiring for me because it always there weren't that many episodes a season. So it's like – I would watch it, and then I would go like 6 months before I watched it. I always watched it like binge, you know, the Californication. They were a half hour, so it was easy to like to really, you know, digest a bunch of those at a time. So it'd be like, oh, wow, we finished in 2 weeks. And then it would be like 6 months before we got the next season. And I was like, okay, here we go. We're good. So
no, it was
love
fun.
It.
All right, let's come back to this book and this series. One of the chapters in the X-Files FAQ is, do you remember the one where – which
right.
sounds like you're talking about Friends episodes. I hate to say Friends again because they were always titled the one where you know,
right.
Joey fell off the Empire State Building. Hope you caught that one. Anyway, it's a compendium of 25 landmark moments in the show.
Right.
Was it hard having watched all the episodes to narrow it down to 25, or was it hard to get it to 25?
You know, it wasn't difficult, I guess, because I've been an X-Files fan for so long, and I took the journey with the show as it aired. And at that point, I was in my 20s, and I had a lot of time on my hands, sort of unlike now where, you know, I'm raising a kid and, you know, doing a job. Back then, I was like, you know, I'm going to get every magazine about the X-Files. You know, I'm going to watch every episode over and over again, all that kind of stuff. So I was like, I was really there for the journey. So I was like, I was one of those fans who's like, when is the first kiss going to be? You know, when are they going to resolve, you know, this particular mystery in the myth arc? When are they going to bring in, you know, this character, or how are they going to finish this off? So I feel like I have this kind of, I don't know, chronology or timeline in my head from the 90s, which is a weird thing to say, but I often consider myself like a historian, even though I write about like the X-Files and Star Trek and Space 1999. I have like this kind of running history in my head, you know? And so I remember those things. Like I remember the thrill of the first movie and they're going to kiss. And then of course she gets stung by a bee, you know, with the virus in it, you know? So it was like, man, that chapter was actually easy to write because in my head, I was thinking as a fan, what were the things that really struck me? You know, watching it, taking this journey with the show. So I just kind of had to resurrect my younger self from, you know, the 1990s.
I was impressed Chris Carter, who created the series, wrote the foreword. How did that come about?
Chris Carter is a great guy. I mean, he's not only an incredibly talented writer, but I think he's very encouraging to fans. I think his work lends itself to participation by creative people. You know, you look at people involved with Millennium, X-Files, and these are people who are artists. They create videos, they create paintings, they create books. You know, they take his work and, you know, they create art from his art. And we, I'm trying to think back how I first got in touch with Chris Carter. I think what happened was after the second movie, I Want to Believe, in 2008, I wrote a review of it on my blog, and it was a positive review because I loved the film. I mean, critics hated it, and I didn't. I loved it. I thought it was great, and I thought I made a good argument why it was good. I hope I did. And I believe after that, Chris Carter contacted me to say thank you for the review, and me being the opportunist was like, you want to do an interview, you know, for my blog? and he very graciously agreed to do that. And, you know, we had a long talk, I guess sometime in 2009, about the X-Files, Millennium, Harsh Realm, you know, the second feature film, X-Files, things like that. And You know, I just always write about his stuff, and I know he at some point was reading my blog. I don't know that he reads my blog regularly or does now, but I know at some point he did. And I mean, I wrote about the After and things like that, and I asked him, because I think he has a really good sense of horror, to write the foreword for my book Horror Films FAQ, which is the same publisher, but it was 2013, the book before this. And he wrote a beautiful foreword talking about his love for Creature from the Black Lagoon and how the Fluke Man is kind of the Creature from the Black Lagoon and the X-Files. I mean, just a really beautiful foreword. I mean, just launched that book in, you know, great style. But at that point, you know, my publisher was looking for another book, and I said, you know, the only other book of this size that I want to do right now would be the X-Files. I really want to write about the X-Files. I love the X-Files. It's a passion for me. I don't want to spend a year of my life writing about something I'm lukewarm on or don't really like. So I wanted to do X-Files, and they said yes. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to go back to Chris Carter and ask. And he was just an extreme gentleman. I mean, such a nice guy, because when he wrote the foreword for this book, he was making the revival episodes. I think he was on the second episode. You know, he was getting ready to direct an episode of the new X-Files. So, you know, here comes this fan being like, you know, write me a foreword for my book about your show. And he did. And, you know, that's actually one of my favorite parts of the book, because I feel like it's a love letter from him to the X-Files fans, but also to the X-Files itself and the journey sort of he's taken in his life with the X-Files. So that is probably an overlong exploration of how that came about.
You just having said all these very nice things about Chris, I'm going to ruin the moment by asking you, why do you think of all the series that he's produced, he's created, only the X-Files has really worked? For example, I'll give you a second to think about that. I think back to Millennium, which everyone was very excited about at the time. I will never get back the hours that I put into Millennium.
Oh, no.
I feel like I am owed a lot of hours on my life that I should get, kind of like at the end of a soccer game. I should get those bonus minutes back to me at the end of life. So if the date of my demise is going to be sometime in 2024, at, you know, 8 p.m. on a Friday, then I think I should get back – let's see, there were, what, 2.5 seasons, I'm thinking?
There were three seasons.
Three seasons.
60-something episodes.
All right, so I should get 60 hours bonus time.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, we stayed with it. We tried.
And you didn't like it? Okay,
Oh, my God, it just made us go, what the f-?
I see. I'm going to have to rip off my mic and leave the interview. No, just kidding.
That's why I let you get out the nice things about Chris first before I ask the bastard question.
I think I love Millennium. It's a brilliantly filmed show. I love Lance Henriksen in that role. I could really go on and give you an artistic defense of the show. I love the idea of the program about the Yellow House and how the symbol of the Yellow House is used, that it's Frank's way of trying to paint away the darkness. And in the different seasons, the Yellow House represents different things. You know, it's the sanctuary from evil in the first season. It's like Paradise Lost in the second season when he separated from his wife. It's like Camelot. It's like this lost thing in the third season. I can tell you my journey with Millennium. When I first watched it, I didn't like it either, because I very mistakenly called it Serial Killer of the Week. I went back and I watched it again, and I caught up with it. And I started to see that Millennium sort of uses its villains in the same way that Star Trek uses its planets. You know, you could say, oh, a civilization of the week, different planet every week. You know, Millennium was using, you know, these twisted, you know, people to say things about who we were as people in the 1990s. And it was doing it without the ameliorating humor of like a Mulder or a Scully. So it was a much more grave show.
Very dark.
Very dark. It's not something you watch in a lark. But, like, I mean, there was one episode that was about, like, alarm systems and a killer who would, like, evade alarm systems. And this idea of being in America and we think we're protected because of technology. Like, that was sort of one show. There was another show, like about a gated community where everybody there thought because they had money and lived in the gated community that they were sort of above reproach, but there was a killer there who was like making them see their sin and stuff like that. So the more I delved into Millennium, the more I felt it was really deep and it was really brave. I mean, so many shows have tried to imitate it, but like every show that has only taken a piece of it. It's sort of like you had Frank Black and his investigations, and you had his insight, which some people mistook for psychic abilities. You had the sort of procedural aspect of it, as well as the psychic aspect, and you had like the serial killer aspect. And so the show was canceled after 3 years. But then you see like the rise of all these shows, like, well, Medium, we're just going to take like the psychic angle. Criminal Minds, we're just going to take the serial killer angle. You know, you saw like mainstream TV like carved up Millennium and said, no, you can't make a show like this. It's too dark. It's too serious. It's too grave. But what you can do is you can dissect it and make it 3 shows or 6 shows. So I think it's an enormously influential show. I'm not here to tell you you're wrong or your impression of it is wrong or to say that mine is right. I'm just going to tell you that I loved it. I loved it and felt it was deep and felt that it was like a really valid and sort of pure alternative to the X-Files.
The only thing I would say in response to that is if the creator of that show had not been Chris Carter, who also had the X-Files on the air at the time, I don't think it would have gotten past season one.
That may be true. That doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't good, right?
I won't dispute that with you.
Okay.
But most people watching a show like that, you watch it once and you go, huh? Or you go, ugh, that's, you know. And I think it had going against it also, and I only bring this up anecdotally, I think the fact that Lance Hendrickson, not the handsomest actor on TV, not a particularly good-looking fella, unlike Fox Mulder, let's say. I don't think that helped. That helped it be, I don't. That's all. That's all. I mean, I don't want to pick on it too much because
right.
It's been many years. But but what about the main part of the question though? Was why do you think that Chris Carter's other shows following X-Files just never quite made it? And that goes right up to recently. He was doing a pilot for Amazon, I think. Was it Amazon or Netflix? And they decided not to even air it. They didn't. I don't think they aired the pilot, or maybe they did. But
the pilot was available. Yes,
it was. Okay.
I loved the pilot. I thought it was great. You know, going back to Lance Henriksen, I think he was a non-conventional choice, but I thought that was okay. I think he's fascinating to watch, and you know, in a situation like that, a creator like Chris Carter is sort of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If he'd created another show with the sort of structure of the X-Files, people have said he's ripping himself off. So one of the things you do is you don't make it exactly the same. You know, instead of having a young, funny man, you have somebody who's got a little age and experience on him, and you make that a part of his character, and you break that your central character. So you're not just sort of building off something you've already done. You don't put him in a partner relationship. You know, you put him in a marriage, you know, something like that. And that then becomes part of the series. So, you know, I think that, you know, he didn't want to repeat himself. You know, it's like, okay, this time we're going to have, you know, two agents investigating, you know, doomsday cults, you know, and one will believe and one won't, you know, because then of course we say it's too much like the X-Files, you know, he only has one idea. You know, Millennium, you know, is evidence that he was trying to think outside, I think, the X-Files box. And in terms of success, you know, you got to ask yourself, why did Rod Serling only really succeed with The Twilight Zone? You know, he had Night Gallery, but, you know, the ratings weren't really good. It lasted about as long as Millennium did. Why did Gene Roddenberry only really have Star Trek? You know, and then later in his life, he had Star Trek The Next Generation. It didn't even make it to a network. It aired.
Not giving him credit for, what was it, Earth 2?
For Planet Earth? That's
Planet Earth, is that what it was? Yeah.
And Genesis 2? Yeah,
Genesis 2, thank you.
Hey, listen, I loved him. I loved him. I'm not criticizing those folks. I think they're, you know, brilliant creators, much like Chris Carter is. But, you know, some people just aren't going to like what you do. You come back with a second chance to do something, and you do something that's very grave. You know, Millennium, sort of inherited the mantle from the X-Files. Originally, the X-Files told some serial killer stories. But then it became clear X-Files was moving into sort of the more horror, direct horror terrain and sci-fi. And so Millennium was more like about the monsters inside of us than the monsters outside of us. Like, not like the Fluke Man, but like the creepy people within, you know? And I think that's a hard sell. I think he did it beautifully. But also, you know, as I like to point out to people, if Millennium were on the air right now getting the ratings it did in 1998, it would be the number one show on TV. So, you know, it was not – at that point, TV was very homogenized. We didn't sort of have all of these other channels like – you know, Dexter came along and did a lot of what Millennium did and was successful for, what, 7 seasons?
But it had a sense of humor.
It did have a sense of humor, absolutely. Yeah. But treading into the dark terrain, the dark inside, the dark passenger, that kind of thing. You know, I think, golly, so if you put Millennium on a station, you know, a premium station, you know, now, you know, we're much more accustomed to that kind of dark side. So you could say, well, maybe Chris Carter was ahead of his time with Millennium. Harsh Realm, you know, lasted very few episodes. I think only 3 aired before it was even canceled. So it's like you can't even argue whether people liked it or not. Hardly anybody found it. Yeah. You know, it was on 3 times. You know, so quality kind of doesn't come into it. It's like, okay, no, nobody decided to tune in. So, you know,
well,
I don't know.
All right, so now that I've ensured that neither Lance Hendrickson or Chris Carter will ever do the show, let me ask you this. Do you have any insight, any expectation of what the new X-Files series will be about and where Carter's going to go with it? Take us.
I know the names of some of the episodes. And I know that they're going to be – it's going to be another hybrid. It's going to be a mix of – it's going to be a mix of the myth arc and the standalone shows, again, the Monster of the Week shows. So it's going to be true in that sense to the X-Files legacy. I know that there's a lot of updating because the times have changed, you know, from the 1990s. Very different times that we live in now. A lot of what the X-Files tread in the 1990s was conspiracies, government conspiracies. The government was doing something wrong, you know, they were putting DNA chips in our vaccines or whatever. You know, if anything, we've become much more paranoid since the 1990s. So I think what you're going to see is a lot more of the modern surveillance state, the idea of government sort of having been licensed after 9/11 to go in and more aggressively at least watch the populace and, you know, with drones and things like that. You know, where could that lead? I think that angle is going to be very significant in the new show. I also know, of course, what everybody knows, that if you're a fan of the show, which is that Mulder and Scully are not together when the show begins. And I think that's a good decision, you know, because things like that happen in life. And we know from Moonlighting that you can't always keep your 2 main characters in love, that, you know, interest wanes. You have to put impediments in front of your main character so that they can fight their way back to each other.
you bring up Moonlighting. I was thinking of I Dream of Jeannie. But, yeah, same. the point is still the same.
Or Lois and Clark. Right?
Lois and Clark, yeah. Sadly. I mean, I was always rooting for – well, never mind. I was always rooting for Clark to – because I wanted to get my hands on Lois. Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher.
All right, so look, we're going to come back to the X-Files in the final round. I have one or two final questions about the X-Files, but we have got to talk about this incredible room you are in.
Thank you.
I didn't have any planned questions about it because I didn't know what I was going to see, but we share an interest in a lot of this genre stuff. You've got Star Trek, that's obvious. But also behind you, you've got stuff of Space 1999, which was about the moon colony that it broke away and was sent off into space, kind of a Star Trek Voyager-like in a sense. You've got The Black Hole, Ernest Borgnine and Roddy McDowell in space, Planet of the Apes. Let's just take a couple of minutes. Maybe you want to grab and point out just a couple of your favorite items behind you.
Got it. Absolutely. Okay. If you ever watched Space 1999, you know that they got around on these spaceships called Eagles. Oh, and look, this, I'm showing you my toy, and it just came loose a little bit. But up here, this is an Eagle from a company called Dinky. And the central section of the Eagle can come out. And there's one that also is a magnet so that it can drop nuclear. It can pick up radioactive containers. Okay, I live for this stuff. Come on, there. See the radioactive containers?
Yep, yep.
And here's the magnet. There's like a little wheel. You can drop drop the rope and pick up the magnet. Pick up the containers with a magnet.
Wow.
So there. Oh yeah, I know. I lived for 1975. That was a great time. Here is a Commander Koenig piggy bank. Here, see, this is Martin Landau.
Oh, that's excellent.
And I'm gonna grab his wife at the time, who co-starred with him.
Right. Barbara.
That sounds fancy. I'm gonna grab his wife. I'm gonna grab the.
This was Barbara Bain, right?
Barbara Bain, Dr. Helena Russell. There,
and they were previously together in Mission Impossible. For anyone keeping track.
Rollin Hahn and Cinnamon Carter, right?
Right.
All right. Yeah, I love Mission Impossible as well. Let's see what else I have over here. I've got my. I am a huge Planet of the Apes fan.
Yep.
So I've got my Planet of the Apes lunchbox, which is very. I don't take this to work to teach, alas, but I probably should.
Can I say I had one of those?
Oh.
And I took it to school. I mean, I took mine to school.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
How long ago that was. But yeah, I took it to school, and shame on anybody who would say anything bad about Planet of the Apes when I had a full lunchbox. Boom!
Absolutely. I love the Planet of the Apes. I just and you know, in that same sort of venue, because it was the 70s, here is your Roddy McDowell piggy bank Galen from the Planet of the Apes TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
excellent.
I've got a lot of stuff like this. I wish you could see.
Talk about an underrated TV series, Planet of the Apes TV series. I'd love to see more of that.
Oh, I love Planet of the Apes. I thought it was great.
Yep.
And it's so great because, I mean, the show was about racism, right? Right. You know, as human, as this underclass, you know, just great show. Now, I have this was from the first Star Trek movie. It's a toy Enterprise. See, can you get a.
Yeah, just hold very still for a minute. There you go.
Let's see there. How's that?
Excellent. Yep.
But the thing that's unique about this, and forgive me if it falls apart because it's 40 years old, okay. But I can yank out the nacelles. Now watch, I'm going to break it. And make like a new configuration of Starship from it. Now, I got it at a flea market in like 1999 for $10, and I was thrilled. If I'd had this in 1979, I would have been absolutely beside myself. Now look at it.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so there's that. I have tons of stuff like this. Now, another one of my favorites, you know, I'm one of those people who's going to defend Star Trek the Motion Picture, too. I loved it. But haven't you always at night just wanted to snuggle up with your own plush Mr. Spock?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Uhuru, but okay. I'll play along.
Mr. Spock, no, Spock's not your type. How about your very own plush Admiral Kirk? See there?
Yeah, no, I was still hoping again you'd say the nurse.
Not even Ilea, not even Persis Kambata they didn't make for this.
Yeah.
But you could see her. Now, she's not plush, but there she is. There,
oh,
Lieutenant
yeah.
Ilea. Can you see her?
Yep, yep.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, there's some back there. What else do we have here? Oh, golly, I've just got so much stuff. You know, I've been collecting this since I was 5 years old.
And you have you had mentioned to me earlier that you have a 9-year-old?
I do.
And does he want to get at this stuff? How do you handle that?
He is a really responsible kid, and we do get out things sometimes. And part of the reason is – I'm going to be just brutally honest about this. Two things. I feel like I want to share my joy about this stuff with him, so there's no sense keeping it all in boxes. It's like, oh, no, you can't touch that. Mm. I'd rather he enjoy it. And now he's like out of the blue, like we watched Deep Space Nine. He's like starting to get into Deep Space Nine. Like, that is so cool. He loves Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's like I didn't even push that on him. I try to bribe him to watch the original Star Trek with me. But there's that, and also, and I'll show you this toy, and you might be able to make it out.
Okay.
Okay. This is a huge eagle that I got for my 5th birthday, or maybe it was my 6th birthday. It was 1976. If you can see this bugger.
Wow, that is huge.
It's huge. And I don't know if you can make it out, but...
Can you hold it up just a little bit higher?
Yeah. Here we go.
That's it.
If you can make it out, it's getting yellowed. It doesn't have many usable years left. It does not. So what am I going to be, like, all precious about it? You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, it's so perfect. It's not. You can see the glue when the manufacturers put it together.
Yeah.
If my son, you know, took an interest in space 1999
to hang that from the ceiling and fly
it. That's right. I've got it down on the floor, but you can see the box for it here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how obsessive I am. I've got the box for it.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I like to share it with my son. For me, that's like that. That's the thing. I want him to share my joy in it. You know, there are a lot of things here he's not interested in. We watch Planet of the Apes. I think he's too young for that. Yeah. That wasn't his thing. So he doesn't want to play with those toys. He's getting now to where he likes Star Trek. Space 1999, I haven't been able to bribe him to watch that with me yet. So I'll keep trying.
All right. Well, that was great. Thank you for that. That was wonderful.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. So as we kind of wrap things up, two very important questions for you about the X-Files coming back full circle. Do you have any tips for fans who may be thinking about binge-watching the original series in anticipation of its return? Are there appropriate drinks or snacks or any of that kind of stuff?
I have to confess, I like to have a good Merlot in my hand while I watch an episode of The X-Files. I do. It just makes it all the more fun. As far as what to have, if you have a mini fridge in the room, keep the stuff close because I love the approach they have. I mean, there's a lot of like throwaway dialogue that you think is throwaway dialogue, but it's not. It's like you need to be focused on what they're saying. You can't go be making bathroom runs and, you know, microwave popcorn runs because you're going to miss a piece of the puzzle. So, you know, have a cooler bag with you. Have a bucket to go to the bathroom in.
Oh, geez. All right. That's a little more information than I need.
Okay.
Let me bring it back then. Last question. Is there an X-Files drinking game that people should know about?
Every time Scully says, Mulder, it's me, take a drink. I don't know how – I'm worried about how they're going to do that on the new show with the iPhones because he'll be able to see her name. She won't have to say, Mulder, it's me, you know? Because used to the old cell phones, you know, they didn't show you the –
Well, they probably won't even if they're smart, they'll jump ahead and they won't use the audio. They'll just go right to video with the phones.
Yeah, they could just do FaceTime, I guess, right?
I mean, they do it on Modern Family so well. They've got to be able to do it.
So you could do that. You could every mention of Mulder's porn, that would be, you know, a good one. Every time Skinner flirts with Scully or, you know, there's some suggestion that Skinner and Scully have had a thing together.
Right. Right.
That would be one. Golly, what else to look for? You know, this isn't really a drinking game, and this part isn't fun. But one of the things that I really like about the X-Files is the complexity. And I love the fact that Mulder believes in everything except conventional religion. He'll, like, believe anything. But then you mention, like, Catholicism and Christianity. Like, I don't believe that. And Scully will refuse to believe anything. But then you talk about Catholicism, and she's totally on board. I love that nuances of the character that they totally flip their personalities when they talk on those subjects. You know, Christianity. You know, they totally flip. Mulder is suddenly deeply skeptical, and Scully is blinding, you know, faithful. I love that. So I don't know if you would drink to that, but it might be something you know. It's like, oh wow, they've sort of flipped personalities whenever religion comes into the picture.
Very good.
I think that's pretty interesting.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can order John Kenneth Muir's new guide, The X-Files FAQ, All That's Left to Know About Global Conspiracy, Aliens, Lazarus Species, Monsters of the Week, and we'll just throw in Mulder's porn collection, from great retailers everywhere, or you can get it right now at a great price from MrMedia.com. If you're watching the show on MrMedia.com, below the video you'll see the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. I believe you can get it in 30 minutes or less via drone in some areas. If not, you know, you can have it probably in a day or two. It's available as an ebook, I assume?
It is. It is now available on Kindle. Absolutely.
Okay, so you can have it in seconds downloaded to your e-reading device. John, do you have a website? Are you on Twitter, Facebook, any of that kind of stuff?
I am on Twitter at JK Muir. I'm also on Facebook. And most of the stuff there I put as public. So you can find me as John Kenneth Muir. I have a terrible old Yahoo website that I don't update. I haven't updated in 5 years. And that's johnkennethmuir.com. But the deal is, if you go there, there's a link to my blog. And I do blog every day, sometimes multiple times a day. So, like, I've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Lost in Space this year. I did a James Bond week last week. I've got a Star Wars week coming up on the bus. So go to my horrible old Geocities website and then click the blog, and it has a horrible URL. So, right.
Oh, those were the days, you know?
Yeah, they were. Absolutely.
All right. Well, John Kenneth Muir, it was a lot of fun. I mean that very sincerely. It was a lot of fun. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
This was a true pleasure. I loved it.
Recorded live before a studio audience full of guys who didn't make the cut as members of the Lone Gunman in the Nooney Media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Oh, look at this place.
Yeah, this is my home office. This is. Let me tilt it this way.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, see on my.
Oh, wow, this is great.
My place. So I love collecting stuff. I've collected some of that stuff since I was like 5 years old, and I'm going to be 46 before too long. So
very cool.
Some of the plastic is yellowing, right?
Yeah.